It serves as a living testimonial to the dignity of man and to the beauty of his woman. I have never before been asked to endorse a motion picture, and so it is with deep pride and humility that I urge you to owe it to yourself to undergo this uplifting cinematic experience.
He's back.
He's bad.
He's black.
He's glad.
He's Kingpin.
Black Ivory Productions presents a Zodiac International release.
Kingpin.
He's a king. He's a pin. He's a kingpin.
Introducing Denver Devereaux Jr., 8th round draft pick of the New York Jets in his motion picture debut, is Kingpin.
And he's got a plan to stick it to the Klan.
Sorry, fella, but you gotta get to the back on this bus.
Listen, you honky donkey. Nobody tells Kingpin to get back.
I thought you were non-violent, Kingpin.
Sure, man. Only when I'm dreaming.
Got a dream, got the steam to be Kingpin.
The year is 1974. The artist is the credibility gapped. Really? Really? Learn
not,
to speak.
Not really.
No, thank you. Gap. The album is a great gift idea. Is there an exclamation point at the end or no? I'm curious.
It about doesn't that. Look like there is.
There is not. Okay, it's just in this thing that makes this star that makes me think it is. Anyway, my guest is Greg Benson. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
At your own house. I do that every time.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for being here at my house.
You are welcome.
You have made it so that I did not have to drive anywhere, mm-hmm. which I appreciate.
Yeah, not a problem at all. It was on my way, sort of, you know, on my way elsewhere, to not my house. So this is the second time we sort of have done floats before, just because my buddy Taylor, he made it pretty sounding. But this is the other option when you buy... is that more common? Is this collection more common of a great gift idea?
I don't think so. What you're referring to is a great gift idea was released twice. It was recorded in 73. It was released the first time in 74 mm-hmm. On Warner Brothers Records, mm-hmm. Just as a great gift idea. It's a beautiful album. It's got a gorgeous gatefold cover and extra comedy on the inside, which is always nice yes. and appreciated. And then in 79, it was re-released. It was paired with the album Floats. And I don't think that Floats was ever released on its own.
I have not seen it that
no.
way.
No. So Floats is only available as this two-album set. And the first album is Floats, and the second album is A Great Gift Idea. And that was released on a different label, Sierra. But I guess that might be a division of Warner Brothers. I can't tell. But Sierra Records... No, it's just a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just a different label. So somehow they licensed the album that was released 5 years earlier mm-hmm. and re-released it. Totally different cover. Frankly, not as good a cover.
It's not.
It's a very cheesy cover.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about this new release, first of all, my vinyl copy is cleaner
uh-huh.
than the original 1974 release. And also, it's got great liner notes
yeah, it does.
Of Harry Shearer talking all about the credibility gap. It also lists... under the track listing, it lists which performer played each role,
mm-hmm.
which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Although it's kind of half the fun just to guess.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that was McKeon doing Rickles, but I wasn't 100% sure
yeah.
until we confirmed on that. I mean, do you want to go down the track? Let's start, first of all, where did you first hear the credibility gap?
So, you know, as a kid, for some reason, I don't really know why I started collecting comedy albums, but when I was a kid in the 70s, because mm-hmm. that's how old I am, I just started going to garage sales and buying records, and some of them would be music albums, but I just stumbled upon, like, The First Family and Bob Newhart and mm-hmm. a few, you know, Pat Paulson records and, mm-hmm. and Shelley Berman and some old classic comedy albums.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of fell in love with comedy records. It wasn't too long before I found this Credibility Gap album. I probably found it in the late 70s or early 80s. But you know, there's all different kinds of comedy records. There's really, really dated stuff. There's stand-up stuff. And then there's sketch stuff. And I've always gravitated towards sketch more than anything.
Sure.
I mean, you have too?
100%.
I love it all.
Sure.
But I myself am a sketch performer, and I've always really just enjoyed sketch comedy and Monty Python's Flying Circus and just the history of Saturday Night Live. And, you know, everything sketch comedy I just love. National Lampoon Radio Hour, another one of my very favorites. But when I found this Credibility Gap album, it pretty quickly rocketed to the top of my list of my favorite comedy albums ever. And if I had to choose a favorite comedy album, it would be pretty difficult, but this is certainly in the top three.
That's awesome.
Along with, like, Firesign Theater's Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers.
Sure. And
maybe another Firesign album. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of sketch comedy stuff that I love. And you've probably covered a lot of it.
Well, no, honestly. Like, more people pick stand-up than sketch.
Really?
And I would prefer to talk, much as I love certain stand-ups, I'd much prefer to talk about sketch all day. Because, especially with this kind of, this is another example of underrated, especially even in my mind, production design. It's the sound design is gorgeous. You know,
yeah. Talking about it that. Sounds great. Down to the gatefold cover and the photos, it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything, the performances are top-notch. Everything about this album just kills me. I love it. I eat up every second of this album. Now, when we originally started talking about doing this, I asked you if you had covered this album because I was pretty sure that you had, but you hadn't.
No.
And you also hadn't covered another one of my favorites, Radio Dinner by National Lampoon.
Right.
Which is another amazing sketch
comedy.
We'll
have to do that one at some point.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm sure that you probably have gone over all the Python albums. Like Matching Tie and Handkerchief. No?
Well, that one we've done, but that's about... I don't
another
want
Monty
to speak
Python
too
record?
Soon.
Did you do another Monty Python record?
I don't know if we have, honestly. We haven't done that many Monty Pythons, and I feel like people resist it because they assume we've already done it.
And have you done, like, Cheech and Chong's first album?
Wait, which one's the first
it's
one?
It's just called Cheech and Chong.
No, we've done...
It's amazing because, like, I would pick these albums as my favorites of all time.
Yeah.
Did you do Don't Crush That Dwarf?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
That was one of the earliest episodes.
Did you do I Think World Bubs Is on This Bus and How Can You Be in Two Places at Once?
We just did How Can We Do Two Places at Once with Phil Hendry. That hasn't come out yet.
Oh, with Phil Hendry. That must have been a blast.
That was fun.
What a funny guy that is.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Wow. How about David Steinberg, Goodbye to the 70s? Has anybody ever mentioned that?
No, and I don't own it. I would love to hear it because I love him.
I'll hook you up.
He's a guy I would love to have on the show, too.
Sure.
You know, David, I know you're listening. That's not happening.
He's busy. He's busy directing TV.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Isn't he directing The Comedians now?
Isn't
that his show?
That makes sense.
The new Billy Crystal show?
That makes sense.
So I love this album, and how do you want to talk about it? Let's talk about it.
However you want to. I mean, so you discovered it when you... How old were you-ish?
I was probably... I mean, who knows? I was probably 12 years old when I found this album or something.
Holy shit. Just, it's so... Like, this is one of those... It's not like you picked up a Lampoon album when you were 12 necessarily, because that shit's inappropriate for a 12-year-old.
Oh, but I did. No, listen, back in the 70s, I was a kid.
Yeah.
My parents got me a subscription to National Lampoon magazine.
Boy.
And there were tits all over
it.
And I loved it. That was such an inappropriate magazine, and I didn't understand half of it because it's so political.
Yeah.
But but I loved it, and it's these things. It's having a subscription to Mad Magazine and National Lampoon magazine that really helped to form my sense of humor and my personal tastes. And it's the combination of listening to some really risque edgy sort of things. Like, I consider this a very edgy album.
It is, yeah.
From 74 especially.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really risky stuff on here.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of stuff that really kind of opened my mind, like, wow, what is possible in the world of comedy?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I love that.
Well, I think, like, even, I don't want to, not that we ever go through track order, but since we just got done listening to the Johnny Carson thing, it's fresh in my mind again. That is 15 minutes of, I won't say no jokes, because there's obviously jokes, but the jokes are not presented to you, the audience, they're presented to the TV audience. You're there the whole time, you're supposed to be on board with this. For the most part, the one voice of reason is the gay soldier, and you can hear him going, oh, come on, in the background and shit. And that's, to me, that's kind of the whole tragic part of it, is you're supposed to be like, wait, he didn't get to speak. He didn't get to say a damn thing, you know? And that's a comment, a 15-minute bit that's mostly about that.
That's the last half of side two. So we're actually just talking. We're now looking at the album in reverse.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is fine. But after this, let's go to the beginning and talk about the beginning.
Good
but yeah, it's a track called Where Is Johnny? And it is sonically a perfect reproduction of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And it sounds exactly like the show. Okay, who was it? Harry Shearer obviously was the one doing Carson.
His Carson's good.
His Carson is almost perfect.
Uh-huh.
And Richard Beebe is doing Ed McMahon. And then you've got David Lander does Dr. William Gielgud and Michael McKeon. Michael McKeon does the prostitute Una von Una as well as Don Rickles, who comes on and uh-huh. and kind of blows the whole thing apart.
Yeah.
You know, with the gay soldier. So it's fascinating because it's so long and they really take the time with it. They really sit with that sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, when else do you hear a sketch on an album that just goes on for so long besides mm-hmm. like on a Fire Sign Theater album?
Sure.
You know, I'm sure that this album in particular was influenced by the Fire Sign Theater.
It seems that way.
There are certain things, especially as we go through it, that'll pop up, like Lance learns to box on side one,
mm-hmm.
that I think is a very Fire Sign-like sketch.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's just a little more accessible, I think, than Fire Sign.
That's exactly, yeah.
The funny 50s and the snickering 60s, when the world still knew how to laugh. Now and only now, from now on, KSL Records is proud to present 16 golden bits from comedy's fabulous past, recreated by the Laugh Masters, Volume 1. Imagine for the first time on one LP recording the voices of your favorite comedy records from the past. Thrillingly simulated in hypophonic stereo and high-impact Klimsagroove vinyl. Guaranteed not to tear. Remember Jose Jimenez in The Astronaut?
My name, Jose Jimenez. The Astronaut.
Remember Bob Newhart in The Driving Instructor?
No, Mrs. Smith. What's that? You say you just made a left turn?
And who'll ever forget those golden goons, the Goons?
Nettie, what's that on your face?
It's my trousers.
No!
Yes, these and 12 other comedy classics from the golden age of recorded laughter are yours and many, many more if you act now. And if you really act now, you'll receive in addition this incredible bonus, Volume 2 of the same record. You'll hear and laugh again at the Laugh Masters doing Mort Saul.
Right?
Shelley Berman.
Oh, really?
Nichols and May.
You're sick.
I know.
And that kooky Kennedy clan from the First Family.
And the rubber duck is mine.
But yeah, the whole Where's Johnny thing is amazing because it's like you're listening to the most politically incorrect Johnny Carson episode ever.
Yes, yeah.
And it's just a pleasure. It's a pleasure to sort of deconstruct. And as we were talking about it before we started recording, how even when they talk about Doc and you hear Doc like walk up to the mic, like he starts off mic and the sound of the audience, everything is just perfect.
Yeah. It's really brilliantly put together. And like this is one where I would really like to pick Harry Shearer and or Michael McKean's brain about it, or David Lander, just because I want to know specifically what their goal with it was. Because yeah, I feel like if you listen to this, you're going to hear, depending on who you are, what your leanings are, what you're thinking about at the time, you're going to hear a lot of different shit.
Yeah.
And you're going to determine what the point of the sketch was yourself, because you got 15 minutes to sit with it.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Now, do you? Let's step back for a second and talk about the credibility gap.
Yeah.
Because I'm fascinated with the history of this group,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't together for very many years, especially with this lineup.
Yeah.
You're familiar with them, I'm guessing, and
yeah.
how really, on this album, You've got Harry Shearer.
Yep.
You've got Michael McKeon and David Lander, who mm-hmm. are also known as Lenny and Squiggy.
Yes.
And then you've got Richard Beebe, who you mentioned is the one you don't know much about.
Sure, yeah.
Which is funny, because he's the only founding member of the group.
Right. Yeah.
And he is on the first album that was released, an album of political pornography, which was from the late 60s.
That one creeps me out, because it always looks like it's Philip Seymour Hoffman on the cover.
Is
that's
that
what
right?
I think every time I see it. It's impossible, but that's what I think every time I see it.
I've tried to listen to that album,
yeah.
and I guess just because it's a very different, it's like a totally different group.
Okay, yeah, I've never heard that one.
You know, I need to give it another shot, because it's been years since I've tried it,
mm-hmm.
But I do remember it being just very political, and it had, you know, Richard Beebe, but it also featured Lou Irwin and whoever else, you know, was originally in the group.
Because that was when it was Lou Irwin and the credibility guy,
yes.
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They started like 68, there we go.
Yeah, and I think that's when that first album was recorded. Mm-hmm. But then by about 69, I think they all started to leave, and they slowly got replaced. Harry Shearer came in, and then David Lander came in, and then I think Michael McKean came in at last. And then they released their first album with that lineup in 71. I'm pretty sure it's that lineup.
Yeah.
For Woodstick and More.
Yep.
Which actually is the only other album besides this, the only other studio album that they recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah. That's the first one I bought.
Have you listened to that?
I struggled through it.
Yeah, it's just not great. I want it to be great. Mm-hmm. I love the idea. Mm-hmm. It's like a comedic Woodstock.
Mm-hmm. I think Floats works better, and it's Floats is actually at a thing.
Yeah, and isn't it completely improvised?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so Floats is completely improvised while they're at like the Rose Bowl Parade or something, right?
Brilliant. I wish they'd do that again every year. I would listen to that shit.
Yeah, it was. That's really interesting. I actually haven't listened to Floats in a long time also, but...
There's some really good stuff on
here. I can see it says Floats was recorded, yeah, live at the Rose Parade, January 1, 1975. In the interesting thing about that is, so they recorded that in 75. This album, it looks like, wasn't released until 79, unless it came out individually, and we don't know about that,
right? I've never seen it.
But then by 76, that's the end of the credibility gap. They broke up.
Yeah,
and then Lenny and Squiddy happened, and I don't know if you've ever heard the Lenny and the Squigtones album.
I've seen it, but I've never gotten it.
It is surprisingly funny.
Really?
But when you consider, you know, the performers, that it's David Lander and Michael McKean, it's no wonder that it's just really, really funny.
Did
but
they write the material?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And they perform songs, and they do a lot of sort of vamping and sketches in between the songs.
Yeah.
But it's a live album. I think it was recorded live at the Roxy or someplace like that.
Okay.
And it's hilarious.
Okay.
It's really funny.
I have to give that a shot.
Yeah, I need to listen to that again also.
I honestly, that's another thing too about David L. Lander is like, in my whole life growing up, I only knew him as Squiggy.
Yeah.
And as the guy in A League of Their Own. That's it. I knew who he was. But listening to him in this, like, he's really an underrated performer. He's so brilliant.
He's so subtle and so funny.
He really is, especially in A Date with Danger on here, which is
really
upsettingly funny.
Let's talk about Kingpin before we
do. Let's go to the beginning of the album. Yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. It starts out with a blaxploitation trailer, audio trailer.
Yes, but it sets up that, you know, it's for the patrons of this theater. So it's both like you're in a movie theater and you listen to this sneak preview, this trailer of this movie, Kingpin, which is based on the life of Dr. Martin Luther King. It's a blaxploitation version of Dr. Martin Luther King as Kingpin. Talk about a way to start an album with a bang.
Seriously.
I mean, with the most... Well, really the most offensive and risky sort of thing that you could possibly start an album with.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why this album sucks you in immediately, because it's like, holy shit, listen to what they're doing.
Right.
So, yeah, now we get to see on the credits here that Kingpin is played by Michael McKean.
Holy shit.
Kingpin's wife, Dr. Juror Stevens, and the announcer are Harry Shearer.
I got to give them a lot of credit for not doing... They were doing blaxploitation voices, but they were not doing exaggerated black people voices. Like, I kind of wasn't sure who was doing any of those voices. They weren't making a joke of a voice, which I think takes a restraint on the part of a comedian in 1973.
Yeah.
I think.
I suppose it does. I mean, you know, it was... The 70s were so politically incorrect.
Sure.
So you could get away with something like Kingpin in the 70s, and I don't think you could ever put something like that on an album today.
I'm doubtful.
You know, of course, very few people are actually recording sketch comedy at this point, but I just don't think you'd get away with it.
No.
And let's keep in mind, so I don't know my history, but I don't know what year Dr. King died.
68. Uh-huh.
So 5 years later, they're recording a parody.
Yeah.
A blaxploitation parody of his life.
Yeah.
5 years later.
Yeah.
Man, that is risky.
It really is. It really, especially for a bunch of white dudes, like, that's not, it's going to look insensitive.
Oh, absolutely.
If people don't get what you're going for, but I think the rest of the album does at least flesh out that these are a bunch of liberals who don't like the kind of people who would laugh at that first sketch for the wrong reason.
Yeah. Now, here's something I just noticed by looking at the credits on the Floats version.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Beebe does not appear in Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if he didn't have a role in it or he just didn't want to be part of it.
Right.
Because he's basically in everything else, Well, yeah. That may be completely true, but it looks like he's basically...
For the most part, yeah. I mean, but still, yeah, to not be in the first one, there's people playing... Are people playing double characters in that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, everybody's playing multiple characters.
Yeah.
Except for Michael McKean, who's only Kingpin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wonder if there's a reason why Richard Beebe didn't appear in Kingpin. I love it. I think it's such a spot-on, again, perfect Sonic impersonation of a blaxploitation film.
Yeah.
And the style is funny, and it's got, like, ridiculous... This album is so quotable. It's got ridiculous lines in it, like, you know, forget about your man, what about your woman? Oh, boy. You know, it's got these...
yeah.
These great moments that are just so horrible,
yeah.
Because it's like what blaxploitation films were in that mm-hmm. time. But then to
yeah, that's the other thing too, is to be making, I don't know, to be pulling out a parody of blaxploitation while it was still a thing.
Yeah,
it takes some foresight. It takes foresight, or like, you know, just a real displeasure with bad entertainment. You know, just a real sense of this sucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the music is perfect. Yes. I mean, and throughout the album, the music is perfect. And of course, you know, Harry Shearer and Michael McKean went on to Spinal Tap and other music-related projects. So they're very talented musically.
Yeah.
And what I love is that there's so much attention to detail and to the styles of music on mm-hmm. this album, which we'll get to when we, like, in a couple of tracks when we hear the Osmonds parody. But yeah, I love Kingpin. And then it goes on to my favorite. I know that Where's Johnny, you said, is probably your favorite on the album, but my favorite is A Date with Danger.
I really like that a lot, though.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
A Date with Danger is a 1950s educational film spoof, like you would hear in a classroom.
Yep. Also, I don't know if we can say it's a first of its kind, but early. This is early to be doing this kind of thing, you know?
I don't know if I've ever heard any other... you know, spoof on a comedy album of 1950s educational films.
Sure, yeah, on an album for sure. I've never, ever heard that in my life. But
And it's done so flawlessly from the very beginning where the film strip, like, slightly goes off of its, you know, and you can hear it sputtering.
Uh-huh.
The music, the stilted acting style, and just unbelievable writing in this. So many quotable lines. And things that I say all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, boys and girls, and parents and teachers who use them.
yes, that's brilliant. I wrote that one down too.
Yeah.
Got my Irma room, my girlfriend, Berbera. Like, there's something about that whole bit, like, where he's just, the way he's speaking is just...
Yeah. This fake, stilted acting. And, uh-huh. and, you know, the thing is, I mean, you can fact check this stuff by going on to, what is it, Internet Archive?
Mm-hmm.
archive.org, and you can actually go and watch old 1950s training videos and educational films, and they're hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
They're exactly like this.
Uh-huh.
Take the case of little Gary Brewster. Let me put that another way. Take the example of little Gary Brewster. He's captain of the football team, lieutenant of the debating squad, and sergeant-at-arms for the Cashmere Sweater Club. Let's join Gary, won't we? He's at the Hamilton High Soccer.
Girly Burberry, sure is a swell dance, huh?
Yeah, Gary. It's all reed, Gary.
Thanks, Burberry. You're okay, too. Mm. So okay that sometimes it's hard to express my emotions in words, you know?
I know.
Gary, let me talk to you for a moment.
I can't now, Spike. I got my arm around my girlfriend, Burberry.
Let her rest, Eddie-O. This is important, man.
It's all reed, Gary. I'll go help with the punch.
Well, okay, I'll see you a little later, Burberry.
Hey, Gary, man. Stinky and I want to let you in on something groovy.
Yeah, go ahead, Spike, tell him.
We got bubbles in the parking lot.
Well, why don't you take a seltzer product?
Man, are you from Squaresville? Hey, Stinky, can you believe that? Tell our oblong friend about bubbles.
She's fast. She's loose. She puts out. She pulls in.
Stinky, tell him the good part.
Oh, yeah. She goes all the way.
Oh, I don't know. I'm in love with Burberry, and besides, I might get a venereal disease, and it could ruin my chances.
It's just amazing.
How long is this? Does it say how long is that? Jesus, it is. It's eight and a half minutes.
Yeah.
It didn't feel that. It felt like a longer than normal sketch, but it did not feel like 8.5 minutes to me.
It kind of flies by, I think.
Because there's a few different segments in it. right. There's, I mean, it's all about VD, right?
It's all about VD. You have a doctor, basically a doctor slash host, warning you about the dangers of VD, and then you know, watch this case study, and then they go to the school, and you hear about this young Gary Brewster, who's the sergeant of arms in the Cashmere Sweater Club. You hear about him as these sort of bully guys tease him into going to have sex with a prostitute in the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
We've got bubbles in the parking lot. Well, why don't you take a seltzer product? You know, I mean, it's full of these amazingly bad but hilarious lines like that. And then, of course, he ends up contracting VD,
mm-hmm.
deadly VD, mm-hmm. and he gives it to his girlfriend, Berbera, who wants to hold on to him because she heard about him in Bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to do this to keep you from leaving me, take me! And she takes her clothes off and they have sex and he gives her VD. And then they go to the doctor, who I guess is David Lander, right?
Sounds like it, yeah.
Let's see. David Lander is Gary.
Yeah.
So Dr. Ranchman is Michael McKean.
Oh, funny.
So, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, he's the announcer.
I'm looking here. So, Dr. Ranchman, Richard Beebe.
That's funny. That's similar enough to me.
Well, because Richard Beebe has this low, boisterous voice, yeah. but he is able to do this. Barbara and Gary, to what do I owe this suspected ex-prize?
That killed me. That fucking killed me. Suspected ex-prize.
It's a commentary on how low the... Like, same with Blaxploitation. How low the budget was, you don't get a second take.
Yeah.
So once you do a take, that's the take you have. And he tells them that, you know, they have VD, and I must warn you that you may die. Aww. They just go, oh. It's just brilliant.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's really solid.
And even... Such a subtle performance. You know, what I have to tell you won't be easy. You both have venereal disease. Like, even like little things like that just kill me.
Yeah.
That, A Date with Danger, every moment, every line is a laugh.
Yeah. And there, this is another, I mean, it wasn't uncommon to sort of pick apart. It's never uncommon as a sketch comedian to pick apart the shit that might have been, that influenced you, that you saw growing up, and you—it's always kind of been in the back of your brain. So it's not uncommon for the fire sign to tear apart their own generation, or definitely the generation before. Same with Monty Python; these guys are just slightly askew from the year. These guys are a bit younger than the fire sign,
yeah.
So, but just enough that the 50s were their thing that they got to tear apart, which is also funny considering Michael McKean and Lander both did this, the biggest 50s tribute on the planet, you know, Laverne and Shirley.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, so they're ridiculing the 50s, but also they're staying very current because Kingpin's a 70s
thing. Absolutely, yeah.
And then the next track, You Can't Judge a Book by Its Hair, is just a, you know, almost a joke-free parody of the Osmonds, their song One Bad Apple, right?
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, you combine that song with, I don't know, maybe it's also a commentary on David Crosby's Almost Cut My Hair. Ah. Just, you know, that sort of commentary on hippies. And
yeah.
You combine the two. I think it's fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, You Can't Judge a Book by Its Hair doesn't make me laugh, but boy, is the music great.
Absolutely. And I did not know it was Michael McKean until, but it makes sense because he's got a lot of range, but like, it's ridiculous how good he sounds somehow with that voice.
And I didn't know until I looked in these credits that his character name in You Can't Judge a Book by Its Hair is Denny Asma.
So stupid.
That's very funny.
Uh-huh.
And then I played you, right before we started, I played you the Foreign Novelty Smash version, which was only released on a 45.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like German, but I'm pretty sure it's gibberish German.
Uh-huh.
Of the entire song. And I think it was a B-side.
Uh-huh.
But it's just the entire song in fake German.
That's so good.
Unless it's real German.
There's some real German, but some of it does not sound a bit like it to me.
That's just great. Mm-hmm. And then it goes into the public service announcement with David Lander as Freddie Herbie. You know me. I thought they was prunes.
Laughs at his own fucking joke.
Yeah.
Because we all know his great catchphrase.
His great catchphrase from, you know, his slogan from whatever commercial that he did.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh. That's great. And then it goes on to this... Can I curse on this?
Oh, yeah.
So to this real what-the-fuck scene, uh-huh. which is in, like, this what-the-fuck PSA,
uh-huh.
which is all about necrophilia, and it's the craziest thing. You just go, like, what in the hell
yeah.
are they talking about? It's pretty brilliant.
Uh-huh.
And short, uh-huh. before you know it, it's over, and it's full of funny little jokes.
Yeah. You don't. It's one of those things where you could not pick it apart and figure out what they're necessarily trying to say. Why that happens, I don't know. But it's great.
It's just something that's strange and shocking and weird. Mm-hmm. And he references, you know, thank God his parents are alive, or he wouldn't be here today. Like as if he would have raped his own parents.
Right.
I mean, it's just horrible. It's horrible. Uh-huh. And then it goes into another great sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Lance learns to box.
Uh-huh. It's very... That one was... you were saying it's a little more fire sign-y.
A little more fire sign-like. Yeah, but more accessible. Not as obtuse
sure.
as fire sign. But the performances are terrific. This is where Richard Beebe really shines.
Mm-hmm.
As the dad. The dad of Lance. And Lance, of course, David Lander is brilliant in this.
Yeah, he is.
And it's just all about... Like a bully of a dad, a guy's guy who wants his wimpy son to box,
mm-hmm.
and it's cruel and it's funny, and he invites a neighbor over to beat him up, and it's just so silly. I love this sketch also. I just love it. And it's almost 8 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing too. Is like I really it's rough for me unless Cheech and Chong I'll put up with a long sketch for. Obviously, fire sign, those are sometimes they don't end. You can't find the end to a fire sign sketch.
Right.
And that's what they do. Like, but normally, if you pass the 5 minute mark with me, it's got to be really good. But they pass the 5 minute mark several times on this album, and it's just, like, I have no interest in stopping listening.
Yeah, I really have no issues with this album. Like, I would say usually albums have a weak spot or two.
Mm-hmm.
This one, in my opinion, does not.
Hmm.
I mean, perhaps 16 Golden Bits is not as entertaining as the rest of the album.
Right.
But we're just not laugh out loud funny. But this album, it's just one amazing thing after another, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then they inside one with that little tiny... parody of a quick parody of I Am Woman, which is Michael McKean singing I'm a Fella, as a cheesy nightclub act.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 18 seconds long and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I sing that all the time. Like this album has been so influential on me. I'm constantly quoting it.
Mm-hmm. Is there something about their, before we get to side two, is there something about their style that you can see in your own stuff? When it comes to the sketch or anything you do.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I of course I'm not on the level of any of these guys, and I'm not saying that, so I want to clarify that. But but Monty Python, National Lampoon's Radio Hour, Credibility Gap, and then of course later things like Kids in the Hall. A lot of these things influence me to such an extent where now, and they're in the back of my brain, so. A lot of times I have to stop myself when I'm writing a sketch or performing something or improvising something. And I go, wait a minute, did I just think of that? Or is that stolen from the Credibility Gap?
Shit, yeah.
Or is that a Fire Sign Theater joke? You know, I have to stop myself. And sometimes I just kind of forget. I mean, I did a prank on my channel Mediocre Films called Elevator Weatherman Prank.
Uh-huh.
And I've done it a couple times in which I just strike up a conversation with people in an elevator. Mm-hmm. And there's a hidden camera. And I start talking about the weather, like people do.
Yeah.
And then I pull down a weather map and go into a full weather report. And I thought it's just something that I thought of that's hilarious, because people always talk about the weather and they make small talk, and that's hilarious.
Sure.
Until someone pointed out to me, oh, that's a gag from Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Is it?
There's a sketch where I think it was Michael Palin.
Okay.
Where he pulls down a map and starts to give a full weather report. I'm like, oh, man! That was in the back of my brain, and I totally forgot about that.
Shit.
Yeah, so that happens. That happens. I mean, sometimes, I steal on purpose. I have a whole character named Yeshman that I stole from Walter Matthau and the Sunshine Boys, which is a movie that just kills me.
Uh-huh.
But, that character is based on Walter Matthau's character.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, I digress.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I appreciate your honesty. Most people be like, yeah, the influence is probably there. But you're like, yeah, no, I've accidentally stolen and on purpose.
Oh, hell yeah. You know? Everybody steals. But you have to steal from the best, first of all. And Absolutely. Then you have to make it your own. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't just steal and that's it. Right, you got to make it your own somehow.
I'm Freddie Herbie. You know me. I thought they was prunes. But now I'd like to show you a side of me you very rarely see. For it's a serious side. When I was 15 years old, I was struck down by a dreaded disease known medically as necrophilia. If my parents had not been alive, the chances are from good to excellent that I would not be standing here talking to you today. For you see, it was only through the efforts of my parents and dozens of dedicated doctors that I managed to lick this big N, this necrophilia. But thousands of people still suffer from this dreaded curse, some of them children. That's why the National Necrophilia Foundation operates a nationwide network of rehabilitation centers where convalescent necrophiliacs on a road to a cure are taught to make and use soap.
I just listened to Martin Short's autobiography, his reading of his autobiography. Uh-huh. And he talks about his influences and people that he basically stole from, and you know, and they're all, you know, friends and some pop culture references.
Sure.
But you know, Martin Short is brilliant in his own right.
Of course.
But it's all everything originates elsewhere.
Sure.
There are no original ideas anymore.
How long do you think they had to rein him in while he was doing that? No, stop doing a character voice, Martin. No. It's just you.
I don't know, man. But he's so great at characters.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's that energy, by the way.
Yeah.
Upsetting. Should not have that level of energy.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. He kind of blows me away.
Mm-hmm.
Side two.
Starts with, okay, so side two, like I said, I didn't get to differentiate much because this is the one I was listening to on the way here. So, except for the Carson one, which somehow stuck with me. So,
it starts with 16 golden bits. That's the KTEL
parody.
Oh,
yes. No, I actually really loved that one.
Yeah.
I really loved that one because I was like, what are they doing at first? Like, I'm like, are they... And then eventually it became obvious it was a KTEL parody. And if you don't know what KTEL is, people, if you're out there listening, KTEL was a very famous brand of records that just made their money off of re-releasing other people's work. Collections.
Yeah. And
great collections, usually. But
And did KTEL... I remember that KTEL in the 70s would release albums that actually were compilations of hits by the original artists.
Yes, that's in my head.
But in this one, it's KCEL.
Yes.
And they've got... I made a note of it. What is it? Oh, they call them the Laugh Masters.
Yeah.
So basically, the Laugh Masters have reenacted famous comedy classic bits, complete with canned laughter. The same canned laughter in every bit. And they're reenacting the Goons and mm-hmm. Bob Newhart and you know all these people. They're just reenacting these bits.
Mm-hmm.
And Nichols and May.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Before I bought this album,
yeah.
When I was a kid in the 70s, I grew up in Dallas, and I used to listen to, I think it was Q102, had every Sunday morning for 2 or 3 hours, had a thing called the Sunday Funnies.
Okay.
Like 10 a.m. to noon.
Awesome.
On an FM channel, and they would play selections from comedy albums.
That's so good.
It was great. Damn. And this is one of the things that really got me hooked on comedy records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I first heard 16 Golden Bits. And I was confused about it. And as a kid, I actually didn't get it. And I thought, is this an actual commercial? Is this a commercial for a record?
Yeah.
But, you know, now you hear it and you realize that these are reenactments of comedy bits.
Pretty great, though. Pretty solid.
Yeah, which kind of brings to mind the question of, well, you know, musicians can do cover songs. Why can't comedians do cover jokes?
Right? We've talked about that on the show.
Have you?
Yeah. I think it's a great concept. I love it.
It is great.
I've actually wanted to do tribute shows where I get people to get way out of their comfort zone and do bits that, like, a tribute show to, like, Carlin. Have everybody do a bit and then, you know.
Yeah.
You know
and But you have people who are cover comedians. I'd like to see a various artist cover night.
Yeah.
Where you have a Bill Cosby guy who comes out and does all of his rapey stuff. Did I say that? Oh my God. Sorry, Bill. Sorry to you, but I'm even more sorry to all the women you raped. Anyway,
At least once every episode, this is going to happen for months. I know.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing that kills me about Bill Cosby, is that, mm-hmm. you know, we've heard rumors in L.A., living in L.A., you hear rumors about Bill Cosby for years and years, mm-hmm. the type of person that he was.
Sure.
And but then it all comes out, mm-hmm. and it just ruins Bill Cosby. It ruins yep. America's Dad. You yep. can't listen to his albums anymore. Nope. And one of my favorite comedy albums of all time was the long side of To My Brother Russell, Whom I Slept With.
Yep.
I used to listen to that at night with all the lights off.
Yep.
And with headphones. Great.
It's amazing.
And it's one of the best things ever recorded by a stand-up comic.
Yep.
And now I can't listen to him anymore.
That's why I made a really tasteless joke about that album online the other day, just to kind of get those albums out of my head.
Did you?
And I put all of my Bill Cosby albums behind my collection the other day.
Yeah, it's just sad.
I can't look at them right now.
And I've got them all. I've got them all.
Yeah.
And because as a stand-up, there was kind of no one more talented.
No, absolutely.
It's him, it's Richard Pryor, it's George Carlin. Those are like the top three you can't beat.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. But
I'm glad we agree on these things.
I'm glad neither of us like rape.
Yeah. My God. Back to the album. Yeah, back to the credibility gap.
Necrophilia. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong.
So 16 Golden Bits. Mm-hmm. Funny. Odd. And then it goes to what I think is the strangest track on the whole album.
I don't know what they're saying.
An Evening with Sly Stone. Yeah. Okay. So Sly Stone, of Sly and the Family Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know a whole lot about him except that he was extraordinarily talented. He made a lot of great soul music.
Yep.
And he also had a terrible heroin problem.
Yeah.
And he ruined his career with drugs. And he was just sort of a far-out dude.
Mm-hmm.
But now, in this thing, An Evening with Sly Stone, in about 5 minutes, they portray him as him and his friends, like, what if they were cerebral, intelligent conversationalists?
Yes.
And they are the great thinkers of the world, and they have these philosophical arguments, and it's just this idea that they run with that is hilarious,
right?
In the fact that it doesn't really have any jokes.
Yep. Yep.
But the whole thing is just funny.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a Playboy After Dark, like the show, but in his, as he puts it, his West Hollywood apartment.
Yeah. It's the strangest. It's just the strangest cut in the album.
Yeah,
and I love it. Even though it doesn't make me laugh out loud, I still love
it. Sure. Yeah. I do wonder if I'm missing something. Same as with the 16 Golden Bits. I do feel like there might be a layer that's just elsewhere.
I'm sure there are some topical references there that you would like. There was something that probably happened in the news with Sly Stone that they are referencing directly that we just don't get.
Yeah.
Really. We should have done more research on this track.
Maybe on that part.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then it goes on to something which I never realized is called In Someone's Sneakers.
Uh-huh.
But that's... And it's Michael McKean plays Rod McPoem. Obviously a parody of Rod McEwen. And I was never familiar with Rod McEwen, so before we did this, I went to YouTube and I watched...
Okay.
Or I listened to a Rod McEwen track. And it is, of course, just this.
Perfect.
You know, it's a word poem set to music. Kind of like beat poetry almost, but not really beat poetry. It's just more like a sort of romanticizing love and relationships.
Right.
And it's very funny. Mm. It's a very odd thing. And I feel like it's something that perhaps Jack Handy was influenced by on SNL. But this is, I think, the first time that they did something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just an ironic, funny script.
It was one of those, I'll be honest, because, again, listening in the car, more of a thinker. I was, because there were no jokes, I kind of spaced it. That becomes a problem if you're being a car listener. There's got to be something, obviously, there's got to be something with a lot of intent to it. It can't be subtle, and that is definitely subtle.
It is subtle, and yet, even as a kid, this was one of my favorite things on the album.
That's awesome. Yeah,
because it is, like, Michael McKean's voice is hilarious, and it is just... It's just funny.
Yeah.
It's just funny and odd. And then we're on to the last track of the album, which is Where's Johnny for 15 minutes.
Which I ruined. I'm sorry.
Totally. It's okay. But I mean, it's genius.
It really is. And his Rickles, McKean's Rickles is perfect. Like you said, he kind of blows the whole thing up after it's already been inappropriate enough with Shearer's Carson just being subtly homophobic. Not subtly, but he doesn't say fag. And then Don Rickles' character comes in.
Yeah.
And just says fag a bunch.
And yet, and it's interesting because, you know, as I know that Don Rickles is a legend.
Sure.
I've never found him funny, though. I've never been a Rickles fan. And I went to see him this January at the Saban Theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paid, got good seats. And was all ready to laugh. I predict I'm going to have at least 4 hearty belly laughs. Mm-hmm. I didn't laugh a single time.
Yeah. Look at the guy with the thing. Was there a lot of that? Look at the guy with the thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. it just was not a good evening. And I saw, and I've never been a Jerry Lewis fan either. And I saw Jerry Lewis at the Saban Theater like a month or two earlier.
Uh huh.
And at least at Jerry Lewis, I had two strong laughs.
Really? Okay.
He got me a couple times.
Okay.
But Rickles just didn't, and I was so disappointed by that because I really wanted to. I wanted to love him. I wanted to finally get him.
Yeah, of course.
But I just don't get him. There's, you know, as much as I've listened to, well, Joan Rivers albums, sure, and Phyllis Diller albums, and there are just certain comedians,
mm-hmm,
who I've just never gotten.
Right.
And they're on the list.
I can understand that. I can absolutely understand that. And yeah. I own Hello Dummy, but I haven't listened to it yet, and that's one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it at all. I'll give it a shot. I just don't know if I'll... Whereas, like, you know, I know some comedians like Jimmy Pardo loves Don Rickles, but Jimmy Pardo's thing is he's not an insult comic, but he's got that energy to him, and he's kind of got that... He does do insult, but it's not as, hey, look at the guy with the thing, necessarily.
Yeah.
He'll do it and then acknowledge that he just did a dumb joke. But he loves Don Rickles, so I guess it takes its... But I don't know if I would. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's an odd thing, because there are a lot of, you know, sort of, I don't know, schmaltzy or Vegas nightclubby type of acts that I just can't identify with them.
Yeah.
And yet, you get somebody like Neil Hamburger who parodies them, and I love it to tears.
Yeah.
Like, Neil Hamburger has made me laugh so hard I can't breathe. I don't know if you ever listen to Neil Hamburger.
Yeah.
Oh, but he kills me.
Yeah.
So it's the parody stuff. And I love Johnny Carson. I think Johnny Carson was great. But this particular parody of Johnny Carson is so spot on and amazing that I love making fun of Johnny like this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not like he wasn't well known for being an open-minded man, necessarily, especially towards the homosexuals.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing also that they didn't put Bob Hope in there, because Bob Hope always with the homophobic jokes.
Sure.
Here's another guy. I never liked Bob Hope.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know he's a legend. Never liked him.
Oh, no. When it comes to him doing, I guess, stand-up, never cared for him. I loved his films. The few that I've seen, I actually really like the Road movies. But then, like, that's also, like, a nostalgia thing, too. Whereas, like, from the same period, you take the Marx Brothers. They'll blow your mind.
Yeah, there's nothing, in my opinion, nothing funnier than the Marx Brothers.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's not that I don't like antiquated comedy.
No, of course. Yeah.
But there's just a certain type that really appeals to me, and some things just don't.
What am I going to tell the guys and the mathletes?
Don't tell them anything. Now, look, if they give you any trouble, beat the hell out of them. You're through taking crap from those people. Surprise!
Wow! Mom, move the clothesline down here.
What's the matter with you? That's no clothesline. That's a boxing ring.
Golly, what are those fat mittens over there? Santa Claus leave them or something?
Those are boxing gloves, young man.
They look like fat mittens.
Will you shut up with that constant cackling? You laugh like a girl. Why don't you try and laugh like me sometimes?
Well, I've never heard you laugh, Pop.
Well, these days there's not much to laugh at, young man. Come on, put these gloves on.
They're too big, I think.
They're not too big. You're too small. You see what it says right there? Official size and weight. So don't go blaming it on the gloves. You got girls' hands. I told you washing dishes could shrink your hands.
But Mom wants me to help in the kitchen.
Mom, the way you talk about Mom all the time, maybe she should be your father.
The Marx Brothers, while at the same time being vaudeville, were also really great satirists. There's actually a lot of that in this. Mike McKeon and these guys have, and Firesign to some extent, have this sense of, like, vaudevillian styles, and they know how to, like, pump it up and be over the top in this way that also emphasizes how biting their satire is, for lack of a better word. I hate saying biting, but no other word for it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just this weird pairing of this goofy acting with, like, oh, by the way, I'm also saying something that should upset you. You know, you should be upset by the things that you're hearing right now.
Absolutely.
And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
This is a really good... I'm glad you picked it, and I'm glad that I finally got to listen to it. I sometimes need an excuse to listen to these things.
You had just never heard this album
before.
I had never heard this particular one.
I'd only heard Wood Shtick and Floats. Those are the two I'd heard before this.
Well, I hope this impressed the shit out of you, and I hope that you listen to it over and over and memorize it, because there are certain things...
Uh-huh.
Like when I listen to A Date with Danger, I recite the entire thing verbatim as it's going on, and I hit every inflection. I know it so well. And same with Lance Learns to Box. I mean, there's just... I can't help it.
Uh-huh.
I love it so much. I it's like I sing along to it if it were a music album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the good comedy. You
know? And it makes me sad, actually, that the credibility gap, as unbelievably talented as they were, they really only had one great album in them.
Sure.
And they never recorded a follow-up studio album. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe it didn't sell well and they were disappointed. The label, you know, didn't promote it, and I'm guessing they were disappointed enough, or the label dropped them, and so they never got the budget to make another album.
Now, there was the Bronze Age of Radio, but was that... Is that a collection?
It is a collection of their radio show stuff. And it's got some great stuff on there.
Yeah, but it's not a studio album.
It is not a studio.
That is the thing about this. I mean, there was a period there, and I think it's mostly in the 70s, where studio sketch comedy albums thrived more than they ever have. I mean,
absolutely.
As much as I don't like Adam Sandler, like, he's one of the few people to ever pick up that mantle of making really good sounding sketch comedy albums.
I'll say this about Adam Sandler. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Sandler fan. I certainly don't go and see his movies, mm-hmm. but... I think he had one movie that I really loved, which is Happy Gilmore. That one kind of killed me.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was recording sketch comedy, mm-hmm. I respect that so immensely.
Absolutely.
And I have my own compilation of his maybe first 2-3 albums of my favorite sketches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy works so blue, you can't play him in mixed company.
Right.
And you can't, you know, play him for your kids.
Nope.
But he's had some stuff that's made me laugh a lot on those 100%. Albums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, they're real hard, because I do get a lot of people who pick, and I have to respectfully decline when they pick them, because they pick the same Adam Sandler albums over. If you hit people of a certain age, that's all they listen to. That or the Jerky Boys, and I can't do the Jerky Boys. Maybe once we'll do it, but I can't do
Yeah, so here's the thing. So it's interesting, because I thought your podcast would cover, like, each time, mm-hmm. once you've covered an album, mm-hmm. you're done.
Right.
And you got to tell people to pick another album.
Right.
But you've covered the same album a couple times.
Yeah. Three or four times, maybe.
So you're right. Because some people just want to talk about that album.
Yeah, and I want their perspective on it. Because you grow up with comedy in your own way. Not everybody made friends over... Did you make friends over comedy? That's something I always like to ask people. We didn't get around to it.
No, but my brother and I would listen to comedy albums together.
That's awesome.
But no, I mean, except for maybe Steve Martin's albums.
Okay.
Like Let's Get Small and Wild and Crazy Guy I listened mm-hmm. to with friends. But really, it was just a personal thing where, you know, I would just hole up in my room and just play my comedy albums and listen to them. And it's the reason why I now have a career in comedy.
Yeah.
If you can call it that.
Headphones or speakers?
Both.
Yeah.
I mean, speakers... before bedtime, and then after bedtime, mm-hmm. I'd have to listen to them through headphones, and my parents wouldn't know that I'd be listening to albums until 1 or 2 in the morning mm-hmm. instead of sleeping.
This is a good headphones album. I will say that. There's a lot of really great stereophonic rendering. It sounds great. It's gorgeous.
I used to listen to the Firestone Theater a lot through headphones because I feel like so much of it just flies by.
Yes.
And you miss it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I love about the Firesign Theaters. You have to listen to their albums over and over and over before you really get them.
Yeah, which is why some people, it's not accessible for people.
No.
I don't want to take the time to get this.
Yeah, but once you do, and I mean, it took me years to really start to get I Think We're All Bozos on This Bus.
Mm-hmm.
But once you really let that album sink in, it's one of the greatest things ever.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something like How Can You Be in Two Places at Once is much more easily accessible, sure. especially the Nick Danger side.
Yeah,
that's how you got to start people.
I think that's a really good point.
Or you got to play them The Giant Rat of Sumatra, which is another mm-hmm. great album and very accessible.
Yeah.
Probably their most accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that?
I own it. I know I've heard bits of it, but not the whole thing. I've never heard the whole thing.
Yeah, it's the Sherlock Holmes
mm-hmm.
spoof. Brilliant. Just brilliant. But I love those guys, and that's why when I met Phil Proctor in the 90s, probably in the early to mid-90s,
mm-hmm.
I was thrilled to run into him at a play, struck off a conversation with him, ended up talking to him pretty much the whole night, him and his lovely wife, Melinda.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends ever since. And then I you know, talk about an amazing thing to happen in my own life. I got to actually make a brief appearance on the Firesign Theater's album, Boom Dot Bust.
So good. That's so good.
So that was a...
What track should people listen to? Pick up the album, and then let's... out there, guys, go buy it. And then do you know what track it appears on?
I don't, but I can tell you that when they sing the Billville theme...
Uh-huh.
I had really just been invited to hang out in the studio and watch them record.
Okay.
And watch them actually write the end of the album. You know, they record their albums, they always have,
mm-hmm.
sequentially, which I never would have guessed.
That's great.
They use a linear editor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not editing... or recording non-linearly, they have to start at the beginning of the album.
Wow.
And record it until the album is finished.
Wow.
And once they got to the last I don't know, 5-10 minutes of the album. It had not been written yet. And so I got to be a fly on the wall while the four fire signs hung out and wrote the end of the album. And it was amazing.
That's so good.
It was remarkable to see these guys come up with what I think is actually a really lovely end to this album, Boom Dot Bust. I like the album very much. But when they get to the Billville theme, I was hanging out in the studio. I brought along a friend, David Hussey, and we're both listed in the credits at the end,
mm-hmm.
In the booklet. But as they were singing the Billville theme, I'm listening to it, and I'm coming up with a harmony for the Billville theme, which I think is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come back in from the recording studio into the control room, I said, "Hey guys, I've got a harmony for you that I think you might like." And they played back the theme, and I sang it along with my buddy Dave, and they went, "Great, go on in and sing it." And we went, "Okay."
Holy cow.
And we went in and sang it, and then while we were in there, they're like, "Oh, we need some background vocals. We need some Walla, mm-hmm. you know, for a scene or two." So mm-hmm. there's, you know, I don't think you could hear me for Walla, but you can hear, when you hear the harmony on the Billville theme, that's me.
That's awesome.
And David.
That's so good. To have a place in Firesign history is pretty... That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I'm a huge Firesign fan. I've got everything they've ever recorded and released, mm-hmm. and I just love Firesign.
Do you mind talking very quickly? No, it doesn't have to be quick. I just don't want to keep you. But we were talking a bit about Dr. Demento by email.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Just interviewed him last week.
Nice guy?
Sweetheart, the nicest guy.
Yeah,
the nicest guy, and was I think he was a little shocked that I didn't want to talk comedy the whole time necessarily. I wanted to talk about the history of recorded sound, which is his thing for sure. But right. It was a really good conversation. But past guest Dan Pasternak has had a song on Dr. Demento's show, but you've also had a song on the show.
I have. That was a real bucket list thing for me, and it happened in the early '90s. I recorded a lot of songs on my brother's reel-to-reel four-track
mm-hmm.
when I was in high school and college. And then I got a cassette four-track, a little Yamaha cassette four-track,
mm-hmm.
and recorded a lot of stuff in the early 90s. And I still record music, and most of it's, you know, comedic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I submitted a cassette tape in the 90s to the Dr. Demento show, because he was still on the air. And I sent him a tape of maybe 6 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the first song on the tape was called I Don't Get Paid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably around, I'd say, 93, mm-hmm. maybe 93. And I come home one day, and there's an answering machine message from Dr. Demento. I saved it. I can play it for you.
Please do.
I will. And he is like, "Hello, Greg. This is Dr. Demento from the Dr. Demento Show. I got your cassette, and I really love your song, I Don't Get Paid, and I'd like to play that on the show. So give me a call." And I called him back, and he answered, and I'm freaking out that it's Dr. Demento, and he wants to play my song on his show. I mean, the show where, you know, as I'm listening to the Sunday Funnies back in Dallas
mm-hmm.
and the Dr. Demento Show, and I'm hearing all these, you know, early songs, and I'm listening to Fish Heads and
mm-hmm.
and Dead Puppies and all those great old songs, and, you know, and I'm listening to the first appearance of Weird Al Yankovic in his studio
as he
performs,
oh my God.
You know, I forget what he was performing, his spoof of My Sharona or whatever it was
mm-hmm.
in the studio, My Bologna. I have a feeling that's what he performed in one of his first appearances on that show. But, I mean, I heard it live, and then to actually be on a show was an amazing thing for me. And Dr. Demento was so generous with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd sent him a tape, and it looked like a legitimate cassette that someone could buy.
Okay.
And he said, if you want, I can tell people where they can buy your cassette. And I said, sure. And I went out and I got a P.O. box because I thought that's what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
And I said, people can send $6 to this P.O. box and I will send them a tape. And I think I sold 8 or 9 uh-huh. copies of the tape,
yeah.
which I would just make myself at home.
Hell yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
And send them off.
Please tell me
those
exist. Is there one that exists? Do you have one? You've got to still have one.
I still have my tape.
Is there a digital version?
I have all my stuff digitally. I've transferred it all to digital. They're all.
Would I be able to put that at the end of this episode?
You want
to
play I Don't Get Paid?
Yeah, kind
of. I could give you the intro for I Don't Get Paid and the song.
Yes, please.
Yes,
if you don't mind,
I will happily send that to you.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I was very, very proud of that.
That's so good. That's so good. Again, like to have these moments, like where there's one thing where you're in LA, there's a chance you're going to run into your heroes.
Yeah.
But I feel like with Dr. Demento, he's this more ethereal thing, because he's this dude you heard on the radio, you heard him back home too, back in Dallas.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, you hear this guy, like that's a different thing altogether to have that guy call you up.
So running into your heroes in LA, obviously that's how I met Phil Proctor.
Sure.
Became friends as I go to the recording studio. I was there several days in the week that they were recording this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, you know, I get there before lunch and they're recording for a while. And then he and Pete Bergman, God rest his soul, they both said, "Hey, we're going to lunch. You want to go grab some barbecue with us?" And I went, "Yes, I want to have barbecue with Crocker and Bergman."
Of course you do.
Also, of course, they all live on Fire Island.
But, Doctor, by insisting on calling it a disease, you're contributing to the stereotype. Just because two men get together in the evening, put on bathrobes, and fry up a couple of steaks is no reason to call them sick.
Wow.
They're frying steaks, you can call them rich.
Johnny.
Come on.
Johnny, you see, the trouble with militant homosexuals is that they just don't know their place.
Well, it's a lucky thing they don't know Doc's place. He'd have to go to Capizio's in a mask.
He probably would.
Hey-o! No, I shouldn't joke about this. I want to ask a couple more questions because I've got some things to learn about this, too. But I should bring out our next guest now because, the health department's about to tear down his mouth. Would you please welcome Mr. Warmth, Don Rickles.
It's a really funny show, John. I've been watching backstage. Two faggots and a drunk. You got a lot of taste, John. No kidding.
No, it's a little steamy around the edges, Don, but this is an important show.
No, it's you I'm talking about, John. You're sick. You got crap in your head, John. Here I am sitting next to the forbidden fruits.
Nah.
It's good to see you, fellas. I like the lieutenant, John.
Oh, you do?
He's got your eyes. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Are you a career man, sir?
No, I'm in the reserve.
What are you waiting for? No kidding. This guy's great, John.
I like to have people tell the audience, if you haven't ever heard The Credibility Gap, and despite the fact that there are clips throughout this show, what's a good reason to listen to it? Why pick this album up? Why is this a good way to get into them? Why bother getting into them? Can you condense what you just said for an hour?
All I can tell you is I love sketch comedy, and there's a lot of great sketch comedy that's out there over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from, you know, Nichols and May, you know, through, you know, modern sketch comedy nowadays. I mean, The Kids in the Hall and who knows, The Ben Stiller Show. Those things might be the most modern references I can think of at the moment. Mm-hmm. But The Credibility Gap nailed it. You know, every once in a while, all the pieces come together. And even though The Credibility Gap have, four or five albums to their name, this is the only album where the stars aligned and they released a perfect sketch comedy record.
Yeah.
It's accessible. It's funny. The performances are top-notch. The production is top-notch. The music is great. And even, you know, even the gatefold cover is delightful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an excellent example of 70s sketch comedy at its finest form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And I'm glad I got exposed to, in my brain, the comparison always to make begins, oddly enough, with Cheech and Chong. Even though it's not the perfectly written, I love it. Even though it's not perfectly written or necessarily all that heavily satirical all the time, it is like the perfect sounding set of records. But this is another to add. Monty Python, Cheech and Chong, these guys, Firesign. Those are the four now that I would think of if I'm going to tell people about production quality.
You can't forget National Lampoon.
That's also true. Yeah.
They also paid a lot of attention to detail with their production.
Mm-hmm.
And, Have you ever heard the National Lampoon Radio Hour box set?
No. See, you've heard way more. I've only heard, I think, That's Not Funny, That's Sick. So, and I have a bunch of them, but I haven't listened to them.
Yeah, you need to listen to Radio Dinner. There are a lot of National Lampoon albums that you need to check out that for some reason I can't think of right now. Lemmings was a live show, which is great, but Radio Dinner is an absolute classic.
Yeah.
And I know I must be forgetting something else from their catalog that...
People suggested the White Album. They want to do the White Album on the show.
Yeah, the White Album followed Oh, That's Not Funny, That's Sick.
Uh-huh.
I think That's Not Funny, That's Sick was around 77, and maybe the White Album was around 79 or 80,
mm-hmm.
I think. The White Album is good, but it's not great, okay. I think. I mean, That's Not Funny, That's Sick is a really dumb, funny album.
Yes, it is.
But Radio Dinner is, I think it's their great gift idea.
Okay.
It's their absolute perfect classic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then people should listen to that, too.
But without a doubt. Absolutely. Radio Dinner is brilliant.
And you can get this on CD. So at the very least...
You can get a great gift idea on CD?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had no idea.
And I think you can get it on MP3 now. I think I saw that today. I wasn't going to buy it because you were kind enough to send me a riff of it.
Besides, it's comedy on vinyl. It's not comedy on CD.
Exactly podcast. Right. Which, by the way, people have been giving me a little bit of stuff for, too. So I've been...
Really?
Yeah, well, because... Here's the thing. If you didn't grow up with vinyl and I want to talk to you, I'll have you come on the show. But we're going to start doing it a little differently, I think. If you pick a CD, we'll talk about it. But I'm also going to make you listen to a vinyl album you've never heard before. So that's going to be part of it. So, you know, that'll satisfy the other part of the audience. And it'll also expose my already interesting guests to something new and interesting. Or awkward and upsetting.
Yeah.
That is also fun because I buy some bad stuff every once in a while.
But there is something that's pretty delightful about listening to an album like this on vinyl, just because mm-hmm. it's the way I always remember it, so the little pops and clicks,
mm-hmm.
for some reason they add something just for me. But I see now, I'm looking at Amazon, and yes, there it is for $8.34.
Yeah.
Or used from $2.58.
And you can probably get this record at the right shop for $2 or $3. Possibly.
There's a shop right down the street from here that all their albums are $3, and I've picked up a lot of great stuff from there.
Really?
In fact, the last time I was there, I noticed that they had a couple of Mort Saul albums that I never mm-hmm. picked up.
Yeah.
And even though all of his material is outdated,
sure.
he's still brilliant.
I love him. People give him a lot of shit, but I actually really like him. So.
He's great. And I believe that he's still performing, and he's still great.
He is. Yeah. So it still carries the newspaper with him and does all that shit.
Fantastic.
Is, you know, I mean, that takes some guts to keep doing that stuff. Okay. So now's the part where we tell people where to find you.
All right.
On Twitter. Well,
you can find me on Twitter or, YouTube is what I'm most known for. Sure. So my channel is Mediocre Films.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off being all sketch comedy, which is why I'm so into sketch comedy
mm-hmm.
and then series. But now most of what I do are prank videos,
mm-hmm.
Which are, you know, I try to make them, well conceived.
Right.
Prank videos that have a structure kind of like a sketch.
And pretty victimless too, which is nice.
Like, I try to make them as positive as possible so that not only does the viewer have a good time, but the mark that I'm pranking will have a good time as mm-hmm. well. And of course, I like to have a good time.
Of course.
That's the whole idea. So you can find me, you know, on YouTube at Mediocre Films. Same with Facebook and Twitter, Mediocre Films. Or Instagram at Greg Benson.
All right.
I wanted to confuse people who are looking for me on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything out there that they can go purchase with your name on it?
Something no,
that you
I don't
point them to.
I mean, except for merchandise, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't need to point people to my merch store where they can buy shirts that make me $4.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a big deal to me.
It's true. Instead, go buy a great gift idea.
Yeah, yeah. Spend your money on comedy albums instead. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Jason. It was really a pleasure. I love your podcast, thank and you. I'm thrilled to finally be on it. It took over 100. Podcast before I got on? Is that right?
Yeah, 130 some.
Wow.
We're getting close to 150.
Well, I'm really glad to finally be on it.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't ask you way earlier because Dan Backadall emailed me like 8 months ago saying you should have Greg on the show. And I'm like, I will. And then I fucking just spaced it.
No
my
problem.
Honeymoon got in the way. Blame my honeymoon.
Hey, fine? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awkward silence. Having an awkward silence. A doot doot doot. A doot doot doot. A ba ba doop 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 doop.
I wanted to see how long we could stretch that.
I liked it.
It's really solid.
I liked it.
Well, again, thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
Everybody, go watch Greg's stuff on YouTube. The cell phone thing is what the in the airport is what et cetera is what
cell phone Dan crashing.
Sent me. Yes, cell phone crashing. That is what Dan sent me, and that was brilliant. And thank I was
you.
Like, oh, thank God! He suggested somebody amazing for the show. And
Dan has been in a video or two of mine.
Has he?
Also, yes, he's made a couple
so
of very funny of appearances.
But also, go buy this album, and as always, have a good thing.
Have a good thing.
Come Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.
Here in Los Angeles, there's a public access TV show called Skip TV, and here's one of Skip's tunes.
My wife gets paid to get up early in the morning. I wake up also, but I don't get paid. I rub my eyes and I lie there yawning and wonder why it is I don't get paid. I don't get paid, not even a dime. I don't get paid, no matter what time. I don't get paid, but I do get tired. I don't get paid, so I can't be fired. Stand at crosswalks and I help old ladies. They thank me nicely, but I don't get paid. It shows that love in mankind is not fading. It's just too bad that I don't get paid. I don't get paid, not even a dime. I don't get paid, no matter what time. I don't get paid, but I do get tired. I don't get paid, so I can't be fired.
I don't get paid for writing the song. You don't get paid for singing along. No one gets paid for hearing the song. So I'll just sit here like a stupid.
At night I go back home and clean the dishes. My wife says thank you, but I don't get paid. If a genie granted me a million wishes, I'd probably wonder how much she got paid. I don't get paid.
Songs from the workplaces and non-workplaces of America on the Dr. Demento Show, and I Don't Get Paid by Skip, which is from the Skip's Tunes cassette that you can get by writing to Skip at P.O. Box 4263, Valley Village, California, 91617. That's Skip, P.O. Box 4263, Valley Village, California, 91617.
Stolen Dress Entertainment proudly presents its new educational documentary series, The Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour Podcast. In it, you will learn such things as the origin of jelly.
So he went home and did his dog in the cage. Yeah. Yes, you can take a guess at what he put in the donut.
The discovery of synthetic cheese.
So along comes this little guy, whom we all know and love, just know actually. Wedgie, I can help you. Can you? Gus, I've got a solution. What is it? Synthetic cheese. Ta-da!
And the brewing process of candy mead.
I get like one of those giant microbrew things, right? Put it on the garage. I fill it with like a 12-pack of Bud Light, throw in a bunch of candies, and just leave it there for a year.
Won't you join us every Monday at www.danandjay.com? We learn you good.
Hello, doctor.
Hello, doctor.
Well, Barbara and Gary, to what do I owe this suspected X-Prize?
Well, doctor, here's what happened. We... the stove, and that's the whole story.